I've got friends who, when they had their babies in their late 30s or early 40s, they were classified by doctors quite officially as geriatric mothers. That's apparently the going term. Is that you? One in five women are holding off having babies until after age 35. The number of women having babies over 40 has doubled in the last decade. This really represents a fundamental demographic shift in this country, doesn't it? And yet I wonder if we underestimate the physical and psychological impact of a baby landing in your world, in your relationship, in your 40s. Do we talk about that enough? So when Serena Kirby found out she was unexpectedly pregnant at 42, she found very little info directed at her age group. And so she's put pen to paper or finger to keyboard and written her own book, which she hopes will help others. It's called Better Late Than Never, Baby, Becoming a Mother Later in Life, Things I'd Wish I'd Known. Good morning, Serena.
Good morning.
Becoming pregnant was, well, really more than unexpected for you, wasn't it?
It was.
You really had reconciled with your husband that a baby wasn't going to be.
Yes, it was not going to be in our landscape. That was a definite. We'd been told that due to endometriosis and my age, we would be child-free.
Mm. And you'd also had a miscarriage, which
I had.
Was a really shocking experience for you. Your description of it is shocking.
Yeah, it still upsets me now to even think about it. And I think a lot of women that do, we're taught to brush these things aside, but there's a sentiment that's always left there of pain and
So tell me about the pregnancy from totally out of the blue.
Oh, look, it totally changed our world, especially for me.
But it was you really weren't expecting to get.
No,
you were on really heavy drugs for endometriosis.
I was, and the amazing thing was that I was tested 48 hours before I started the treatment for endometriosis, which is very common in amongst a lot of women. 1 in 10 women have endometriosis. And the blood test showed that it was negative for pregnancy, so we went ahead with the medication. But in that gap, actually 36 hours before, I conceived. So he is truly a miracle child to a midlife mum.
And you were both very nervous, weren't you? Because drugs come with warnings.
Mm.
Thou shalt not get pregnant on these drugs. Don't do it.
That's right. And I mean, they're so strong. They're used to treat some types of cancer as well. So look, it was just a fluke of nature and a totally fortunate one.
Once you were pregnant, though, there were some fears for you, weren't there?
Yes. I mean, there was medical complications, fears. I definitely had a sense of what might go wrong. I opted not to have an amniocentesis, which a lot of my friends were very surprised about. But the risk of miscarriage was actually higher than the risk of Down syndrome. And with that, you've always got that in the back of your mind that something may be wrong. And I did feel a little sense of apprehension and holding back, just hoping that everything would be all right.
The baby arrived by Caesar.
Mm.
Your husband was there to...
Oh, yes.
...to lift him out.
He was. Good on you.
He was very keen. But in the months afterwards, you describe that wave of maternal love becoming matched by what you describe as a powerful undertow. What was that undertow? Describe the transition that you're trying to articulate here.
Okay, that was the thing at the time. I couldn't articulate it, and it was just this feeling I felt of drowning. It was just this grappling with trying to be something new and not feeling that I had any support to do it, although at the time I didn't even know that that's what I was trying to do. It was almost like being reborn myself because you're becoming a mother, you're becoming something totally different to what you were before. It was like an itch I couldn't scratch because I couldn't work out what was wrong with me, and it certainly built. The first 6 weeks everyone prepares you for and says you're going to be tired and you're going to have, issues and dealing with babies. But it was this ongoing ride of emotion that I was going on that really started to play with my mind. And I think you're already dealing with lots of hormones and all the changes that you have to make. Mm. And it was uncomfortable. There was this bittersweet, I think, really.
Just describe what you were feeling, because it was all sorts of layers. I mean, there's fatigue here, and you make a really strong argument that we underestimate the impact of fatigue. But it was also a kind of profound existential kind of crisis, really. And you've really dug into the literature to try and understand that now, because it's not talked about.
It's not talked about. And I mean, it was amazing when I started to research, because I wanted to find out what happened, what was I feeling, what did I go through. And mind you, this was quite a bit further down the track, because at the time I was just dealing with it. I couldn't even get the strength to work out what was going on with me. But it was like undergoing molecular rearrangement. It really was this a shift in me from the core. Mm. Most mothers cry about various things. You know, you have a sense of depression, or you're having the blues or whatever. But I do distinctly remember standing there one day and crying and saying to myself, I've just turned into my mother. How did this happen? This is not what I wanted for myself. So that wasn't just the adjustment issue, but that was that thing of, I thought as an older woman who'd had more life, I was a bit more contemporary, that my motherhood role would be different.
High expectations, you argue, for particularly for older mothers.
Yeah, I thought I would be different than the generation before me. And that smack in the face of, no, this is the role that you have, and it is quintessentially the same no matter what generation you're in. And that was scary.
There was depression.
There was.
But you don't name it as postnatal depression. And in fact, your reflections on postnatal depression are very interesting to me, because, and particularly about the tensions around medicalising that transition and the experience of depression. It's both a helpful thing to name postnatal depression, but also you saw some complications there.
I did. There's still a stigma, you know, around postnatal depression. The funny thing that I found, funny, it's not really funny, but is that doctors use a medical test for, well, it's a questionnaire to diagnose postnatal depression. They don't have one for fatigue. Now, fatigue is known as the number one precursor to postnatal depression. My argument now is that I believe, had I been treated for my fatigue and the other issues around that, A, I perhaps might not have developed postnatal depression, but B, I might not have had it anyway. So I just think that there's a quick fix scenario happening with PND and
by naming it as.
Yes, and because, you've got postnatal depression, here's the medication, thanks very much, off you go. But the thing is, your circumstances haven't changed. So as soon as you stop taking that medication, you can still spiral into what you were experiencing before. And that's what happened to me.
Mm.
The situation hadn't changed, just the medication. And, as soon as I stopped taking it, I was back where I was. So,
why did you want to write this book? It's a book that, tells your own story. It interrogates some of the myths and misunderstandings about what it means and the experience of being a mother in your 40s for the first time. And then it also offers a whole stack of advice and tips.
Mm. For me, it really was, I wanted to know if I was unique in what I experienced. I had this lurking suspicion that there was more going on here, that there was a bigger picture to what I was experiencing. And as soon as I started researching, within that very first week, I started to realise, okay, there's a name for all these various things I was feeling. There's research to back up what was going on. Now, surely I need to share this information. And purely that's what it was to understand for myself and to share it with other people, because I knew, starting to research and talking to other mothers, we all had echoes of the same story. And I thought, well, it's not just me. I'm not unique in this.
What particularly do you think is unique to having a baby in your 40s for the first time? And what unique in terms of the challenges that you experience? Because you list them. I mean, things like the expectations and the particular type of isolation that women can have.
That's right. And also the adjustment. The adjustment is one of the key issues, because from that a lot of other things flow. adjustment requires you as a mother to go from being selfish as a single, career woman with independence, with personal financial independence.
I think selfish is a contested way of describing that, I would say. But
on the contrast side is to go to being selfless.
Mm.
And that's what you're required to be as a mother. I mean, you give up yourself, and any mother knows that, for the priority of somebody else. And that shift between the one and the two doesn't happen overnight. And it takes time. And I do believe that the bigger the life you had before child, the longer that transition takes.
Is there evidence to suggest that?
There is, a lot.
Some examples.
Oh, well, there was a study done in America and... Well, there was lots of studies done in America, but one in particular, the researchers interviewed older mothers, and all of these mothers had the same story to tell, that they felt like they were having to rebuild themselves from the inside out, and that they found it very, very difficult to give up their financial independence, their physical independence, and take on this role of motherhood after not having to be answerable to anyone, pretty much before, and to be recognised for the work that they did. I mean, being a mother, especially being a new mother, is a fairly thankless task at the end of the day.
The isolation is something you acknowledge too.
Yes.
And the fact that often older mothers don't reach out for help, and that was certainly the case for you. The word help got stuck in your throat like a fishbone, is how you describe it.
Yeah.
Now, what's that about? Because and the other point you make is that you've moved away often from family to pursue a career, etc.
You have, and the thing is that for older women who are used to being, confident and not having to ask for help for a lot of things because we're totally self-sufficient, to then turn around and ask for help for the most basic of things like, can you help me with the, hang the washing out? It's quite hard, and it's a bit of a punch in the ego at times. And I mean, I remember talking with a couple of the mums that I interviewed, and one of the mothers saying, a lot of people said to me, you need to get help. But no one offered to help me. And that was the difference. And that's what I had as well. A lot of people saying, you need to go and talk to someone. But no one said, look, here, I'm here, talk to me.
One of the things that happened to you was that within the first 3 years of you having your baby, your marriage unraveled.
Mm.
And you reflect on that now, don't you? 3 years on again.
Yeah.
About the pressure on the relationship and what might have been helpful to know for both of you. And also older fathers,
yes,
experience the same sort of burdens.
They do. And there is research to support the fact that if a mother is suffering from postnatal depression or any sort of depression or adjustment issues, the older father is likely to be experiencing the same thing. And there again, I did speak to a lot of older mothers whose marriages hadn't survived. There's no research yet on the phenomenon of separation amongst older parents. Mm. But, I mean, we do know that a lot of marriages end. They do end in the first 5 years of a child being born. So it's a compounding thing. The more elements you've got on top of each other, it's going to make it more difficult. But like I've said in the book, the whole thing is to get informed and find out about these things. It's not a negative tale. It's more there to go, hey, these are the things. If you know what they're called, if you understand them, you can get through them.
It's naming it, isn't it? Now, one of the things you do that I find very powerful here, women over 35 know the risks. They're told them continuously now, in this generation, perhaps less so in the previous generation, the risks of increased disability within the child, the risks to yourself. But you've actually looked at evidence to suggest it's actually, in terms of the health picture and the risk picture, it's not quite as bad as it all seems.
No, it's not. It's not at all. And the research is that most women, the majority of women over 35, have uncomplicated pregnancies and produce a child without any complications. That is the fact. The thing is that a lot of people are relying on research that is from decades ago. And women of this age group have significantly changed since decades past.
How?
We're healthier. We have had less infections. We have genetically we are healthier because our mothers were healthier. We have healthier lifestyles. We make healthier choices. And there is proof that using research from even more than a decade ago is no longer relevant. I know that one university in Australia, as a result of the book, is already going to take on a renewed research program into this very issue, because the research is just not there. I mean, the characteristics of women have changed too much to rely on anything that is out of date.
So this is beyond the question of fertility, obviously, to the kind of health profile of women having children for the first time in their 40s.
Yeah, and so, you know, like I said, anything past a decade ago, we shouldn't be using. But the problem is these studies just keep coming up and keep getting regurgitated in the media and all the rest. And there was one American doctor that I looked into her research, and she said, look, I'd rather have a healthy woman of 38 than an unhealthy mother of 28. And that is often the difference between the two.
So that's the hopeful story.
It is. And look, I have gone through every single one of the medical complications that have been connected with older mothers. And look, there are very, very few that really are valid when you are dealing with today's older mother.
So how is it having your child now?
Fantastic.
As a woman in your mid-40s?
No, I'm now 50.
Oh, you're now 50.
Actually, I'm 51.
You're 51.
I've just turned 51.
And how old's your son?
He's seven.
Seven, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's
how do you reflect on all this then?
Oh.
Given the challenges that you faced.
It's been an amazing journey. A lot of sorrow, I must say that. And, you know, like I was talking at a conference the other day, and it still upsets me to think that I didn't know the things that I know now and I wish I had. But look, it's fantastic. He is my life renewed. And the greatest thing about having a child when you're older is you've got the perfect excuse to act like one.
Yeah.
You know, so we're off to Luna Park this weekend. We're just going to go to the Powerhouse Museum now. You know, I can play with Lego and it is a reborn. I'm reborn again. And it took a little while to get here, but it was certainly well worth the wait, and better late than never, baby.
Yeah, absolutely, and I love you. Apparently at that conference you had a room full of midwives weeping, so that's a major achievement. And the other thing I just want to mention is that in the book you also contest some of the myths around having an only child, and I think that's very good too.
Yes, that's been very helpful to a lot of people, because a lot of older mothers feel guilt about only having one, and I wanted to debunk that myth too. And I've got to tell you that my boy is very happy, very well adjusted, and does just fine.
Serena Kirby, thank you for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thank you.
Off to the Powerhouse Museum to have some fun with her little boy, who has been here for the interview, little red-headed boy. Serena Kirby there. Her book is Better Late Than Never, Baby, Becoming a Mother Later in Life. We'll put a link to Serena's website from the Life Matters page, and that's where you can also listen to the audio of the story. And in fact, now you'll notice it's much more obvious. You can actually share all our stories on Twitter and Facebook and a whole range. You can email them. You know, it's a great way of getting our content out to your networks, your social networks. Please do that for us. We want more people to know about us. Of course, we go out to the nation, so lots of people can tune in on their radio, but on the ABC Radio app now too. Up next, some of your calls.